Hello, it's June 1st, and this is Joey Shimotaro from Good Morning Gloucester. I'm here with my guest, Ron Gilson. Ron, say hi to our peeps.
Hello, Joe, and all the people at sea.
And the people at sea?
Yes.
I hope
all the fishermen that are out there fishing today on all the boats that are coming into Captain Joe's tonight.
There you go. Very nice. We are in fact, taping this from Captain Joe and Sons. And we have a bunch of things to talk about. The summer is, this is it. This is June. Things are popping.
This is what we're waiting for. This is what we go through winter and the fall and all that bad weather coming on June 1st, St. Peter's Fiesta. Oh, 4th of July, are you kidding me?
The grass is green. The flower blocks are planted.
That's what it's all about.
The mulch is spread.
And we're in the most beautiful place in the world, Cape Ann.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable is correct.
We might have just saved a life. I mean, if anyone was ready to kill themselves just now, they listened to that, we might have saved a life.
Well,
right?
Let me tell you something. If we've saved one person today, it's been all worthwhile.
There you go. I love it. All right, Ron. Well, we're going to jump right into it. You have worn many hats in your illustrious working career. I'm going to talk about one of them right now. You probably had the first upscale breakfast eatery in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Would you say the first upscale? Was there any before you? I mean, there's Sugar Mags now and Willow Rest, but was anybody doing upscale breakfast before you?
No, not to my knowledge. There were many breakfast places in Gloucester at the time.
Many great breakfast places.
Yeah, yep. Many great breakfast places in Gloucester at the time. And, you know, we bought that building on 284, 286 Main Street, and we named it the Union Hill Coffee House because it's at the foot of Union Hill. And we, to be honest with you, we went in there and we didn't know what the heck we were doing. Okay, we bought that building.
No restaurant experience.
No. Only my son, Brent, had graduated from Essex Aggie in the culinary arts program. And he was the one that lobbied his parents to buy that building. And we were going to have just a small muffin shop at the time. When we got in there and started to tear that two-and-a-half-story building apart and took down all the false walls and drop ceilings and so forth, we wound up with a large cavernous interior building that was something a lot more than just a little muffin shop as we anticipated. Anyway,
can you go into a little bit of what that building was beforehand?
Yes.
Because I know it had some kind of...
It has a long history, that building. At 284, 286 Main Street, directly across from Gorton's main office, the backside of Gorton's main office, that building was in my youth, was a bicycle shop. A guy by the name of Mel McDonald ran a successful bicycle repair and bicycle sales shop and sporting goods store. The story goes that he had a problem in that he sold a BB gun to an underage or a young boy, and the kid fired the BB gun and put a kid's eye out. As a result, he was sued back in those days in the 30s, the end of the Depression. And the story goes he had a difficulty and pretty much lost the business. Then it was purchased by a man by the name of Carl Cameron, who was our neighbor on Eastern Avenue, and he was in the plumbing business. So he operated a plumbing supply store there and a sheet metal shop upstairs on the second floor. And then it went to another plumber, Luongo, and then finally, when I purchased it, it had been an antique store and a key shop, if you will, on the right-hand side as you look at the building. So we bought this building in March 9th of 1981, and as we passed papers on that building, and I had the carpenters on the roof that very day in a snowstorm, and we were plugging up the holes in the roof where the pigeons were flying directly through the roof and the water and the snow and so forth. And the building was in terrible shape.
It was in terrible shape. You knew that. You took that into account. And did you, when you were upgrading, because you did a fantastic job with that renovation, did you correctly assess how much it was going to take financially to get that building to where you wanted it to be?
No, it did not. And,
people rarely do, yeah. Do they?
March 9th, we purchased it. We opened it on September 17th, 1981, and we had spent in excess of $300,000 on the building.
Back then?
And we had renovated it from top to bottom. One interesting thing is we went to the Gloucester National Bank for a loan, and the then President Jack Kennedy told us that he'd give us the going rate and try to do a little bit better, and he quoted us 22% interest rate at the time. Jesus. That was when our famous President Jimmy Carter was in command, and we promptly turned that down, but we went to another local bank that treated us a lot better, and we've been with that bank ever since. But we opened it September 17th, 1981, and I'm going to tell you, it was an experience of a lifetime. We didn't have any experience, only my son. We opened on a Thursday. Now, all the rule books about restaurants tell you it's the accepted procedure to open Monday or Tuesday. Why? Because the customer flow is down the first part of the week, and it gradually increases towards the end, and it's better for you to have a little breaking in period before you're hit with this large crowd on a weekend. We didn't do that. We violated that rule and opened on Thursday because, as I told my son Brent at the time, Brent, we are so broke that we have to open Thursday morning, win, lose, or draw. I don't care what the rule book says, we need the cash flow. And yeah. We did. And I'm here to say that we had an overflow crowd, of course, tire kickers and people wanting to see what was going on here because we had been working on the building for 9 months. Anyway, we had such a crowd, an overflow crowd, I had to call Boston Restaurant Supply and bring in 10 tables and 40 chairs to increase the capacity of the restaurant to accommodate the crowd. Friday, we were all set up to accommodate the crowd, and they showed, and we filled the place, and we had a line outside. But then we had a problem in that we didn't have enough kitchen equipment to service the income, the flow of orders. So Friday night, we had Cape Ann Plumbing down there working overtime to divert the gas pipes and reconnect another fryer later and put in a second grill and put in a convection oven. And we worked into the night for Saturday morning. Saturday morning, it was total chaos. It was standing room only. And, you know, we were ill-equipped to handle this. Sunday morning, interesting, we served fried dough in the restaurant. And fried dough, as you probably know, in Gloucester, is kind of a Portuguese delicacy. My old baker, Lillian Furtado, came. She insisted that she had to have Sundays off to go to church with her family. Monday morning, we work 7 days a week, so Monday morning she came in. She said, "Ron, you'll never guess what happened in church yesterday." And I said, "No, what happened in church?" She says, "Well, Father Ralph's advised all, spoke to the entire congregation, and he said, the front pews, come forward and fill up the front pews. I don't want anybody sitting up back at the end of Mass rushing down to Union Hill to get fried dough. You all come forward." So that was, you know, we had the endorsement of Our Lady Good Voyage Church, the whole neighborhood, plus all the, and really, we started off with a bang, and we continued, I want to say, for 13 years, from, 12 years till 1993 when we closed. But yes, the restaurant was a one-of-a-kind restaurant. We attracted all the neighbors, and I grew up in Ward 2, so little did I know, but those same people that I lived with and growing up, they supported us, and of course we had all people from all over town attending.
So so once you finished up, did it? One of my favorite restaurants, and a restaurant that I kind of credit as kicking off the upscale dining scene in Gloucester, because there had been like the White Rainbow in town, but yes. They had been there for years. But then this restaurant came into town, and it was Au Beaujolais. And you, so you, was it, was that the transition from you closing Union Hill Coffee Shop and straight to Au Beaujolais?
Yes, we closed the restaurant, and we tried to sell the business. But, of course, restaurant businesses are tough to pass on. We found that out. And because we had a unique restaurant and we did a lot of things the old-fashioned way, hard work, squeezed our own orange juice and baked our own bread. And so it was difficult to replace that that whole theme with new owners. They just didn't want to do the work. So the restaurant stayed closed for several months. And we interviewed some other people. In fact, one of the most successful restaurants on Main Street today. Passports.
Eric Lorden, yeah.
Yeah. He came to me and thought at that time he might want to rent or lease that building and put his own restaurant in there. And for whatever reason, we didn't get together. So he went on his way, and he finally opened up down on Main Street.
Well, originally he was in East Gloucester. It was a Square Cafe.
I don't know, but he came to us, and he eventually wound up down on the Main Street. But so then along came this man.
David?
David, and he had a partner.
Alex.
Alex, was it?
Al. Alex, yeah.
Okay. I think Al was the one that had the money.
Al was the chef. And then David was the front
of
the house.
David was the front guy.
Yeah.
And David was a real challenging, you know, he knew the business, and he was a very convincing soul, and they had money, and so they leased the building, and they opened up, and I didn't follow it, but
I enjoyed that place.
I think that it was a very successful restaurant, Au Beaujolais.
Yeah.
And in the very beginning, it was like, you know, in fact, so successful that we purchased the lot across the street, which was a gas station, Frank's Auto Part, and we intended to make parking for Au Beaujolais.
So how did they end up moving down to where the Franklin is now, and then they opened up Cafe Beaujolais? What was the end of that? How did it all end?
Well, it all ended in the springtime. I went down to install the awnings on Monday, the day off, and I found several people with clipboards down there going over my property, taking copious notes photographing, you know, whatever we had there. And I asked them who they were. And they were the Internal Revenue Service.
Oh, meals tax?
Yeah, and they had, followed through in paying their taxes, FICA, you name it, payroll taxes. And, of course, anybody that's been in business, that's a cardinal sin once you do that. So the whole thing was going downhill, and it went downhill fast, and that the restaurant never did open. I was successful in retaining my equipment, which I was leased.
Oh, wow.
So they didn't clean me out. So I got the building. And eventually, within a few weeks, Au Beaujolais was gone.
Yeah. So now let me ask you a question. Were you in the restaurant trade? Did you mainly manage people, or did you take orders at all?
No, my wife said often said that, you know, you're out front, the front man, and I'm in the back working. And my son would often say, there's Dad out there. He's Mr. Gloucester and meeting all the people and shaking all the hands and passing out the free coffee while I'm here breaking my back to the back,
right.
which in hindsight was probably true. But I had a saying also. I told my wife, you know, you hire and I fire, and that also became my job. I did the
You were the heavy.
Yeah.
Well, I brought something up on the blog this week about people when you go out for dinner. And one of my big pet peeves is when you're with someone and the waitress or waiter comes over and takes the order, and they don't look up at the waiter or waitress, and they say, they'll look at the menu, I'll have the split pea soup. And they'll say, can I please have this? I'd like to have this split pea soup. Mm-hmm. May I, you know, please and thank you. Mm-hmm. And I feel, it's very, very embarrassing. Like when someone does not look the waiter in the eye, doesn't give them that acknowledgement, and just treats them like a third world. Did you find that there were many, all kinds of patrons, like good, like, because I know that people like to take shots at wait staff and stuff like that, but you could be a bad patron as well.
I always, in the later years, my wife and I eat out a lot, and I think a dining experience should be a total experience. By that I mean, when I go to a restaurant and I'm waited on by these people, I've been in the business. I know what it's like. So I always have to have a rapport with the waitress or the wait person, and I may kibitz with them or talk with them, oh, your name is this and that. By the end of the meal, we're getting along like peas in a pod.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's important. Mm. I think that to establish a rapport and a friendliness with the wait person, that person's working.
Mm.
Likewise, I've been with people that say, well, now, how much are we going to give them for a tip? I think if I have a good dining experience and the waitress is
pleasant
and sociable, you know, the trip was part of the cost.
That's it.
And they're out working for a living just like I did. Absolutely. 20 years before.
I think in my entire life, there's been two times, and I eat out a lot. I eat out a lot. There's been two times where I haven't left a tip, for just unbelievable reasons, I'm the type, I like to over tip. If I have a really good experience, I'm more apt to over tip than to not. I agree. I think it comes back to you. I think you're doing yourself a favor too. Like if you really take care of your waitress, they generally, more times than not, take good care of you, right?
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Yeah,
it's good karma.
It works. That's a tough job. Anybody that ever worked in the restaurant business and has a station of tables, four or five tables that they have to maintain.
Yeah.
Take orders and so on. That's a tough job.
Day in and day out.
And they're not getting paid that much hourly wage.
Yeah.
So, they're there for the tips. Mm-hmm. If you stiff somebody, you're only stiffing yourself.
There you go. I like that line. Very good. Well, all right. Well, moving on. And I know where you're going to fall. Well, I'm 99.9% certain I know where you're going to fall on this subject. But this is a very sensitive subject. And I don't know where it breaks, but recently Ringo Tarr, they just put out the flags on the boulevard. And it's a beautiful display honoring our veterans. Memorial Day was just now. You yourself was a Marine.
Yeah.
Right. Now, some people say that the flags, the amount of flags is distracting to the vista of the natural harbor, and that maybe they could just put a good amount of flags, but like maybe a little bit further down on the boulevard or something like that. And some people say that is absolutely ridiculous, that this is a great honor and it makes our community special that we have all these flags honoring our veterans and people that fought for our country. And to be honest, I could see both points, but then when Memorial Day came around and I started to think that I think my generation and younger, we do not as a whole, and I'm not, I think I'll speak for myself, I don't think that our generation gives enough respect to people that serve in the military and have gone overseas and fought in the wars. I mean, you know, anybody that is debating this issue in their mind, I think, you know, you should watch that movie. Was that Spielberg movie where they, you know, where they're landing on the Omaha beach and the shrapnel and they're getting just blown to bits, you know, fighting these wars and stuff. And that'll probably change your mind in a hurry. But I think that as a country, we've gotten away from the patriotism that I think what I sense back in like 30 or 40 years ago was more prevalent. Now, how do you feel about the how do you feel about the flags on the boulevard?
The flags on the boulevard. You're asking me probably for the first time because I have never even thought about that situation. And maybe it's overkill to some people. Maybe it's destroying a view or taking away from the panoramic perspective of the harbor and so forth. I never thought that much about it. But you know, to me, you mentioned I was in the service. I was in the Marine Corps for 5 years. I came out, fortunately, as a commissioned officer in 1961. I spent 18 months overseas in Iwakuni, Japan with the 3rd Marine Division. I was not in combat, but I was on a landing ship ready to make a landing at Laos, which is the beginning
Cambodia.
Of Vietnam.
And is that Vietnam?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the very beginning.
Okay.
And we got called off. We were at anchor in Buckner Bay in Okinawa with the 7th Fleet. I woke up one morning. We came in there and dropped anchor at midnight. I woke up the next morning. I was right under the flight deck of the Shangri-La. So, and the whole 7th Fleet was there. Fortunately or unfortunately, we didn't go in, and it didn't start then. So I'm not a combat veteran. I was never in combat. I don't have a whole chest full of medals or anything. But I served 5 years and 12 years in the reserve. So I have 17 years service in the United States Marine Corps and the Navy Reserve. You're right. In my era, when I graduated from Gloucester High School and from 1947 through 51, veterans were returning from the war. We were aware of that patriotism. The kids today, they've lost that because we have insignificant wars, Korea or whatever, the forgotten wars, Vietnam or whatever it is. It's not all encompassing like it was in the Second World War. So our generation, my generation, we were steeped in yeah. millions of men being killed and so forth.
Yeah.
So when we see the flag, I keep a flag in my condo. I had it out Memorial Day. No one else did, but you know, I really don't care.
Because you have the best unit.
So I am.
Just kidding.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think it is.
It's for sale, as a matter of fact, if you want to go.
Patriotism is, with me, it's a big thing. And when I see people like Spielberg and Clint Eastwood and making Iwo Jima movies and so forth and so on. That's, in fact, I'll tell you a little story. One of the bloggers here is a kid. I call him a kid. He's a man. Paul Frontiero Jr. Well, he's a nice boy. He can't be anything else but nice because his father before him, Paul Frontiero, was my good friend. We had a commonality in that we both appreciated he was an artist, an accomplished artist, and I appreciated art. While I dabble, I often went to my friend Paul for a few pointers and lessons and so forth. He once said to me, Paul Senior, he says, "You know, Ron," he says, "I have the highest respect for Marines." I says, "Really?" "Yes," he says, "in the Second World War, I was in combat. I was in the Navy." "Really?" "Yep." And he says, "You know," He says, I ran LCVPs. That's a landing craft personnel shot. And shot for landing craft personnel. And he says, I was the guy responsible for delivering 44 men on the beach. And he says, when I brought them into Tarawa and Iwo Jima and those places, those rat-infested islands in the South Pacific, and I dropped the doors on that, and those guys jumped out. He said, I said to myself, my God Almighty, if ever I have any respect for anybody, it's the Marine Corps. I says, yes, Paul, but I'm not a combat veteran. He says, I don't care. He says, you wore that globe and anchor, and you're the number one guy with me. That's my Marine Corps story, but you know, on Memorial Day and Veterans Day and November 10th, the Marine Corps birthday, I'm all there. I'm sorry, that's part of me. Yeah. I even get a haircut once in a while.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my story. How do I feel about the flags? I don't have an opinion.
Well, you like the flag. You have an opinion, and you think it's great.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Well, there you go. You know, I saw both sides of it, but then this past Memorial Day was the tilting point for me, where I thought about how little and this is a fault of mine that I pay homage and respect to these things on a yearly basis. So it's a good reminder. It's a good reminder.
My friend.
I mean, the ultimate price. These people are paying the ultimate price, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how terrible is it? How can anybody say anything different? These guys went over, jumping out of for our freedom, for our to protect our country, and putting themselves in harm's way. Not like these stupid storm chasers like we saw for the in that video that I showed you 10 minutes ago.
When you're called out at midnight and told that you're going to meet your outfit on a perimeter of a peninsula where an LST is coming in to pick you up and 144 men to go aboard an LST, you got an executive officer that's a second lieutenant. Neither one of you know what the hell is going on. When you're called out at midnight and sailing out to meet the 7th Fleet to make a landing that you don't even know where you're going, let me tell you something. You know?
That's the shit right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some guy in Notre Dame or Purdue or something that's running up and down the gridiron, that's one thing. But when you're climbing down that cargo net and you don't know where you're going.
Boom.
That separates the men from the boys, as far as I'm concerned.
Very good. Well, there you go. I think that was a good little piece.
I'll tell you one other story while we're at it.
Okay.
friends of mine, Lisa Lucido and her husband, Chris Lucido, have 4 children. They're a wonderful family. They're sports-oriented. The Lucido name goes back when I was in school, Jack the Rabbit Lucido and so forth and so on. That's that family, Joe the Barber and Lisa. They have 4 children. They're wonderful kids. They're all honor students. They do well in school. They're athletic. Why wouldn't they be? And so forth. The oldest boy is in college. The oldest daughter graduated. All wonderful citizens, up-and-coming citizens. They all decided they wanted to go to college and so forth. Now the third youngest, the boy, Alex, graduates in Gloucester High School, the class of 2013. And his choice is going into the Marine Corps. Wow.
Wow.
I said, so I wrote that young man a letter, and I told him what I thought. Now, who am I to tell this kid? But I did want to reassure him that while he may be giving up college, something that everybody aspires to today, everybody goes to college.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get a job, but they go to college. Mm-hmm. He's opted to go in the Marine Corps. And I told that young man, at the time he spends in the Marine Corps, he's building a foundation for the rest of his life. And believe me when I tell you, the principles that he learns in the Marine Corps, the foundation that he receives in the Marine Corps, I guarantee you, when he's 70 or 80 years old, he can look back and say, some of my success, whatever it may have been, I can directly attribute to the United States Marine Corps.
There you go. Very nice. Very good piece right there, Ron. See, I love, you're a great guest. Well, we have you. We, you know, you, it's riveting. Like, I'm on the edge of my seat right here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to finish up with this. This is something we do every podcast. And if this, so you have to use your imagination right now and say that you are on death row, okay? And you the executioner says, any sub shop in Gloucester, we're going to pick you up a sub as your last meal. What sub is it going to be? Where are you going to get it from? You got one sub, one last sub for a meal.
Wow, that's a tough question.
Well, there's a lot of good sub shops in town.
Yeah,
you got Destino. I mean, the old school Destino's. You got over. You got Captain Hook's over by on Lanesville Way there, and then you have
Vigilio's.
I mean, there's a lot of good sandwich shops in town.
I think
there's that Willow Rest makes good sandwiches. That Cuban sandwich.
I'll tell you this. When we had the restaurant, we went for years, 7 days a week. Finally, we took a day off, and my wife came to me one day and she said, "You know, there's a cruise down at Roses on a sailboat. We could go out for 4 hours for $70 or whatever." And I said, "Yeah, let's do that." So we went on this cruise. When we came in, I said, "Let's complete the day and get a nice sub and get on the stage Fort Park and sit there and enjoy that." Where did I go? I went to Vigilio's in the West End. We got a beautiful sandwich down
there. St. Joseph's sandwich?
St. Joseph's sandwich.
Oh, traditional, yeah.
You know, I thought that was pretty good at the time. Is it the best? I don't know about the best, but it certainly ranks right up there.
It's held up over the years. I remember when I have a memory, my first one, I remember sitting down in front of the Main Street side of St. Peter's Club. They had the benches there when I was just, I mean, I might have been 8 or 9 years old, and my father brought me into Vigilio's for the first time and got me the St. Joseph sandwich, you know. And, I mean, it's the same sandwich today as it was 35 years ago.
Tough to beat.
Tough to beat.
Tough to beat.
Very good. Right up there. All right. Now, okay, the second question.
I thought you said there was just going to be one question.
No, I said two. It's a two-part kind of deal.
Okay.
So have you eaten out anywhere recently where you want to give a shout-out to a certain restaurant or restaurateur lately?
Repeat that question.
Have you had a meal around town that you'd like to give a shout-out and a recommendation about a certain place that you've eaten recently? It could be breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Well, I eat a lot. I eat out a lot, but I don't...
It could be a specific meal at some place.
Yeah,
do you have a go-to, like you have a special anniversary, where you're going to take your wife?
Well, for breakfast, we've gone to Olivia's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How are they doing? I haven't been there for breakfast.
At first, I thought that's last year, I thought they were struggling, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have what I thought was a good experience there for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
This year they have new ownership, and I think it's a very nice venue. It's a nice.
They dumped a lot of money into that place.
Yes,
I know that.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
And I think their breakfast, the variety is excellent there. They have a good menu. That's the first. Morning Glory is on Main Street, is another excellent.
Jeez, I haven't been there in forever. I should stop in and say hi. So you know, that's one thing in Gloucester.
There is
no place that I have traveled. You know, I have traveled to many continents.
Yeah.
I am a breakfast person.
Yeah.
There, I have lived in different cities. There is I don't think the city of Boston has
any better variety
of breakfast joints as we have here. George's. The Fort Square Cafe, Mamie's Kitchen, Olivia's, Morning Glory, the Two Sisters. Did I say George? I don't know if I saw George's. If I didn't say George's, you got to say George's. And I think that they're expanding right now. I mean, because there's so many, you can't be average.
No.
They all have to, you have got to produce you, on this, the personality.
You don't survive.
You will not survive.
That's right.
This is a breakfast town.
Yeah.
I lived in Danvers for a short stint while I was having my house built. And I would wake up and I'd say, oh, where are we going to go for breakfast? And like they had one place in downtown Danvers. It was called Brothers Diner or something like that. And it was just, it was kind of like cafeteria style, nothing fancy at all, that thin kind of crinkly bacon and stuff. And you realize when you were away from this place, you realize how lucky we are, right?
So. Yeah, I oftentimes are driving down Essex Avenue at noon, 11:30 or so, and because the Causeway restaurant is so jammed with people from all over the Northeast, not just Gloucester.
Yeah.
I if it's 11:30, I'll jump in there and get a bowl of fish chowder to go.
There you go, yeah.
Two cups. I'll tell you, it's a meal.
All right, well, there you go. This is it for our first podcast of June with my illustrious guest, the ever young.
Oh.
He may be old and it's only a number, but he has the energy of a young whippersnapper. Ron, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you, Joe, for having me.